actually today, we can at least try. We had talked about breath is such a good way to center us, because it's always present. It's not like we have to have something special at hand or a special moment or even silence to use our breath to kind of bring us to the here and the now. But there's something else that we often do a lot of that can work in the same way. We usually treat walking as a means to get from point A to point B. We often, at least I notice whenever I visit a city, that people do it quickly, which is fine. But they do it with a sense of distraction of they're already where they're trying to go, and their body's just catching up with the walking. You know, they're all forward-centered. And it often seems, in watching people walk, that I'm having a hard time putting it into words. It's not something that's relaxing and centering, but rather something that's a bit disruptive and urgent and hurried. Does that kind of, do you understand a bit? Does that communicate a little bit? I'm not sure that the way it's being done is all that helpful to their state as being present and available for whatever's happening in the moment. Thich Nhat Hanh talks of using walking as its own reason. It's not a means necessarily to get from point A to point B, but it can be a meditation if we choose. It still will get us from point A to point B, but the way we get there, the journey we take to get to the destination, may be as helpful or as important or as insightful as getting to the destination. It's a very different way of looking at things than the way we normally go about our life. He lives in a village in France, and everybody in the village, to go anywhere, does a walking meditation. That's all you see. So that the journey of getting, even if it's just going to go answer the telephone, or to go to the restroom, or to take a break, or to go to meal, the journey is as important as what they're doing. Talk about bringing you present. Yeah. Would you like to try it just for a few minutes? I think if we go outside, we'll lose the group. In fact, I'm pretty sure.
We can walk in amongst the rows of books in the library.
That would be fine. I was hoping we could bring our circle in and walk around the outside, but it's not going to work. So, Pat, I actually like your suggestion. Some of you could walk in here. Some of you can go into the library or just kind of on the first floor. Far side room is also available, although there's a lot of chairs in there. Let's stand up. And take a deep breath. A nice, slow, deep breath. And slowly let it out. And now let's just turn to our right, all of us. Other way, Lois. Other right.
I was telling him turn left, so I should say turn right.
I loved it. That was great. So what Thich Nhat Hanh advises is that we be aware of standing on the ground. Be aware of your feet being firmly supported on this ground. And now very carefully, very intentionally, pick up a foot and take a step forward. Transfer your weight to that foot. And now the other foot. Very slowly, being aware that you're taking a step. Let's try doing it together, and then I tell you what, I'll release you, and you can walk at your own rhythm. It's important to find your own rhythm and your own pace, But just be aware of the actual walking. The other thing you can do is tie your breathing to it. If your natural rhythm is maybe 3 steps for a deep breath in and 3 steps as you take a deep breath out, you can tie your breathing and your walking together. It's a remarkable experience, but it'll take a little bit of trying out different paces and rhythms. So let's go right foot and left foot. And right foot and left foot. Right. Left. Right. Left. Feel free to break out of the circle. Just be aware of the breathing and the walk. Did we lose anybody? Anybody missing?
One or two maybe.
One or two. Well, I think they're out there walking, and that's what they need to do. This was a very kind of brief introduction. But there's a possibility. Could you kind of taste maybe a possibility?
I found it hard to keep my balance. I'm so used to walking real fast and just, you know, everywhere. I mean, I'm always, you know.
Yeah, it does require a bit more balance, which is not a bad thing to practice on.
Yeah.
Balance is a learned thing as well as a gift.
Mm-hmm. I'm still in training.
But it's another way to slow your day down just a bit, to pull you into where you are rather than the future or wherever you're going. It's just another practice, one more thing.
Yeah, so do you take a reading before that you focus on, or not necessarily?
You can do that. You can certainly do that. You could take a word from Lexio, or you could do this before you approach the scripture or breath. It all works at however, play around with it. Thich Nhat Hanh says, like with a breath prayer, puts words with it. He's Buddhist, so he, I believe his words are, I am here. No, I have arrived. I am home. I have arrived. He does 3 steps for an in-breath. I have arrived. I am home. I have arrived, I am home. You could put any words you want. So it becomes a breath prayer and a movement prayer. Whatever, you know, breathe in God, breathe out. It doesn't quite the rhythm, but you understand. Whatever words that you want that are prayer words for you, you can put with the rhythm of the walking and the breathing.
It's nice to have Daniel's music.
Oh. You know, Daniel, that was...
I had a piano attack.
And it made me smile. Yeah, remember Daniel's near a piano. Thank you. Thank you. And you can have music, or you can be outside. Thich Nhat Hanh will take a walk just to take a walk, without any destination in mind. So it's good.
Did you talk about the labyrinth already?
No, I haven't. Okay. Would you like to talk about the labyrinth?
I might, yes.
You know, I confess, is the one here, the Chartreuse model?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where is it? Where is it? I've been looking and I haven't found it. Okay.
Keith will tell Linda. Does everybody know where it is, or some other
people?
Well,
I looked on a map, but I still can't really pinpoint where it is.
Keith, why don't you enlighten all of us?
Okay, so take the main street up, past the footbridge, and then the road will have a blockage on it saying, dangerous, do not use. And so you take a side path around.
Around the danger zone.
Around the danger zone. And you end up back on the main street again. And follow the main street half a mile past the foundations of the old houses that were knocked down. And you'll come to a field and signs there about where the hikes are and so on, and the labyrinth is to the left. You cannot see it because it's disguised with 2 or 3 foot high goldenrod and other flowers, wildflowers, but it's marked out with sawdust
or wood stuff,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So that you can't see it when you arrive at the end of the road. You have to look left and walk left towards the river, and there you'll find it. And there's a little sign box there, and inside of that is a laminated piece of information about what the labyrinth is and to walk it and so on.
Thank you. The labyrinth came about, they've been a part of human culture for thousands of years. They were found in Greece and around the Mediterranean. I'll never use the word ancient again. Thousands and thousands of years ago.
Pre-Christian, yeah.
Very pre-Christian.
Maybe an obscure question, but do we know that was the original purpose of the labyrinth, or was it co-opted?
Oh, we probably adopted it. I'm sure we adopted it. I don't know what the original purpose is. Yeah, that's a very good point. It's like Christmas trees. It's like putting Christmas at the winter solstice. We've adopted things that have meaning and reinterpreted them with our meaning. I think it was in the Middle Ages where it had some ascendancy in the Christian tradition of people wanting to take pilgrimages, but not everybody being able to go to the Holy Land. So the idea of being able to take a journey where you lived without the huge geographic distance came about, and labyrinths were put on, inlaid on floors of cathedrals, and the one with this one's pattern is in the floor of a cathedral in France. And there's no right or wrong way to walk a labyrinth. It's not like a maze where you can take a wrong turn. There's one path, so you can relax. Okay? And it's meant to be a metaphor for spiritual journeying. The Chartreuse labyrinth is perfect for that because you can't see how you're going to get to the center. You start on the outside and you can't see how you're going to get to the center because the pathway is too intricate. But there's 180 degree turns and 90 degree turns. Talk about spiritual journey. You're headed along one way and the path all of a sudden turns you. exactly the opposite direction. It'll bring you in very towards the center to where you're enticed and you think I'm almost there, and then it throws you way back out on the periphery.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
It's spiritual journey. And the fact that you really can't see how that pathway is going to get you to the center is all part of it. Mm-hmm. There's many ways that you can walk it. One is, I've never seen anybody rush through a labyrinth, although I suppose you could. But a walking meditation, people seem to just normally know that this is a different way of walking now. And most of the time a walking meditation is what's used. Lots of things. You can think of, as you walk in, you can bring a question, you can bring a word, or you can just be open. And a lot of people will say the walking in is where you give up things. You spend time in the center, just listening. And then your way out, you retrace all your steps. The way out then is the reintegration between what happened in the center and the going in with coming back out into the world. But there's no wrong way to walk it. Those are just suggestions. But it's a remarkable experience. If you have an afternoon left and haven't walked a labyrinth, you might want to consider it. It's remarkable. Is that enough?
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
If you want to talk more afterwards, I'd be happy to do that. I love labyrinths. I often incorporate them into retreats if they're available.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that they have portable labyrinths. Mm-hmm. They're actually on canvas, mm-hmm. and you can bring them to any location.
Mm-hmm. And they have finger ones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, where you can just trace up
with your finger. Those are the bookstore.
Oh, there's a bookstore here, Pat?
Yeah, and there's a pillow if you wanted something softer.
Okay. Hmm. Okay. And there's different labyrinth paths. They're not all patterned on that one particular. There's many different paths, many different patterns. But again, and I started to say ancient, a practice that comes to us from our ancestors, it connects on a very primal level. It speaks deeply. And we can interpret it however we wish to interpret it, whatever self-help for us, in whatever tradition. Different timing marks. We need to be done at 9:30 on this schedule, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We have a passage today that, again, is very well known. But it's important for us to actually be in this narrative, for us to receive it. This is definitely one of those narratives where we can't hold it at arm's length and just read it from the outside looking in. It really begs us to enter in and to be a part of this. I'm just going to read it. And you don't necessarily have to listen to a word or a phrase. Just take in the story. They came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho, Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting by the roadside. When he heard it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout out and say, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Many sternly ordered him to be quiet, but he cried out even more loudly, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stood still and said, "Call him here." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up. He's calling you." So throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. And then Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And the blind man said to him, "Teacher, let me see again." And Jesus said, "Go, your faith has made you well." Immediately he regained his sight and followed him on the way. story that happened either before it or after it. Anybody ring a bell for anybody? Jesus and his disciples are on their way to Jerusalem. It's the final journey there. In fact, this is the passage right before he enters Jerusalem. So there's a poignancy to it. This is the last time he will be outside of Jerusalem. Well, I shouldn't say that. It's the last time that he will be journeying to Jerusalem. He won't be leaving it to go back home anymore. So let's listen to it again. This isn't as critical time-wise to set this story as some of our other narratives. There's lots of things to consider when you're listening to it. And I just would like to go through them. They're the types of things that we would use with a guided meditation. Bartimaeus was blind, and therefore he sat outside the gates, begging on the roadside. That was how he provided for himself. So we might want to consider what parts of us sit by the roadside, outside the city gates. What are those pieces of us that aren't quite a part of the mainstream or the main flow, that are wounded, that are hurt, that sit outside the city gates? Who or what voices encourage us to speak about what we need? And what voices tell us to be quiet in our lives? Bartimaeus threw off his cloak to stand up and go. What do we have to throw off in our lives to be able to stand up and go towards Jesus? And then there's that question. Jesus said, "What do you want me to do for you?" How would we answer that? How would we answer that? Okay, is that enough for the questions? Just some thoughts about this passage. It's a very powerful passage with many pieces of it that actually invite us to think about, what would we do? Where are these pieces in our life? We are Bartimaeus, I guess is what I'm trying to say. We are Bartimaeus. So try to listen to this passage in that way. I'm going to read it one more time, and this time listen for the word or the image, or perhaps the phrase that speaks to you. They came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho, Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting by the roadside. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout out and say, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Many sternly ordered him to be quiet. But he cried out even more loudly, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stood still and said, "Call him here." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up. He's calling you." So throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. Then Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And the blind man said to him, "My teacher, let me see." Jesus said to him, "Go, your faith has made you well." Immediately he regained his sight and followed him on the way. So are there words, phrases or images that speak to you?
My teacher.
My teacher.
I sprang up and threw off his cloak.
Take heart, he wants to see you.
Let me see.
Let me see.
This isn't just a phrase, but the thought that really stands out to me is that Jesus wanted him to articulate to him exactly what he wanted or needed. I'm sure Jesus knew the man was blind. And of course, he'd like to be healed, but he wanted to hear the man express to him what God wants us to really converse with him, tell him.
Thank you, Ross.
Thank you.
Have mercy.
I can just say, there's several heads nodding.
And he asked for mercy before he asked for his sight.
Yes. Yes, twice.
Get up.
Get up.
Take heart.
Take heart.
Blind beggar.
A blind beggar. Aren't we all? Aren't we all?
There was a large crowd.
Ah, a large crowd.
Crying out.
Crying out. Yeah, George.
Crying out. I had the thought that to let me see could apply to any of us, let me see. It may be in a different manner than visual, but...
Thank you, Emil. This isn't, again, not just about the physical. Don't get hung up on the physical here. It's like yesterday. There's more. There's more. Keep going. Keep going. Okay. Thank you.
I'm with Lois on the question, what do you want me to do for you? And it's an important question, reminding me of ask and ye shall receive.
I know we said no comment, but I think this is speaking to our deepest yearnings and longings. It's not about superficial, which is why these are the questions we are invited to articulate. It's not about I want a new. This is about our heart's deepest yearnings and longings, and those we are invited to articulate. There's a difference. There's a difference with what this question's really asking. I need a male voice. George, you haven't read yet. Do you mind?
Don't.
Is it from here to here? Thank you. Listen again. Image, word, phrase.
They came to Jericho. As he and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho, Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting by the roadside. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout and say, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Many sternly ordered him to be quiet, but he cried out even more loudly, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stood still and said, "Call him here." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up. He's calling you." So throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. Then Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" The blind man said to him, "My teacher, let me see again." Jesus said to him, "Go, your faith has made you well." And immediately he regained his sight and followed him on the way.
What did people hear this time? any different things that came out for you this time?
My teacher.
My teacher.
He said he wanted to see it again.
Yeah.
So he wasn't evidently even burned.
He would not be silenced.
He began to shout.
Take heart, get up. He's calling you.
Son of Timaeus.
Son of Timaeus.
Cried more loudly.
Jesus stood still.
And followed Jesus on the way.
Follow Jesus on the way. There's a reason these words are speaking to you. A few moments of silence to ponder what in your life causes these words to be significant for you. What's going on personally. And at whatever level you're comfortable, if you'll share what in your life intersects with this passage and those words with your neighbor. And we've got an even number, not counting you in the circle. So start at either end and just pair on.
They came to Jericho. As he and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho, Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting by the roadside. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout out and say, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Many sternly ordered him to be quiet. But he cried out even more loudly, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stood still and said, "Call him here." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up, he's calling you." So throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. Then Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" The blind man said to him, "My teacher, let me see again." Jesus said to him, "Go, your faith has made you well." Immediately he regained his sight and followed him on the way.
What is this narrative saying to you? What is God saying to you through this narrative? What is the Spirit saying? What might Jesus be saying? A few moments in silence to think about that. Now quietly share what you're coming.